from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments on whether Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which makes workplace discrimination on the basis of sex illegal, extends to gay, lesbian, and transgender employees. At 9, we'll talk about this case and what is on deck for the rest of term. Then at 9:30, Republicans are blasting President Trump after his decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria. We'll discuss the latest developments in the region and the political fallout here. It's all coming up next, after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The new term of the Supreme Court opened yesterday, and this is the first full term with Justice Kavanaugh on the bench, and the five-member conservative bloc on the court could roll back existing law. The court will be addressing a variety of divisive issues, including immigration, abortion, religion, guns, and rights for gay and transgender people. And court watchers are wondering if Justice Roberts can or will hold the center. Joining us to discuss the latest news is Jessica Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School. Welcome back to Forum, Jessica Levinson. Good to have you with us.
Great to be back with you.
Yeah, I guess the place to begin here is today and what's going on today. Right today, we have a very controversial case that's being essentially argued one way and the other. It goes back to Title VII and civil rights. We're talking about a fight over the rights of employees to be gay or lesbian or transgender without being fired. And there are three separate cases in this, two with gay men, one with a transgender employee who was fired actually after transitioning or announcing a transition from male to female. This is essentially a Title VII, as I said, but the Trump administration has been arguing all along that the court the law provides no protection under civil rights under Title VII. That's the essence of the argument, I believe, isn't it?
That's exactly right. So the irony is that when Congress passed this landmark piece of legislation, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, as you said, Title VII prevents workplace discrimination. So you couldn't fire or demote somebody or have separate, let's say, working conditions like separate lunchrooms based on race or national origin. But it wasn't supposed to include the word sex. That was actually put in at the very end by a conservative congressman as a poison pill. And he was trying to bank on the idea that, well, his colleagues might be willing to protect people because they were discriminated based on race. But certainly there was not clear agreement that we should protect women in the workplace. He was actually wrong. This backfired spectacularly. And so we have this word sex in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. But we don't know if it just protects you from being fired because you're a woman or being treated differently because you're a man, or if it also includes two different categories of people, people who are discriminated against based on sexual orientation or based on gender identity. And that's what this whole case is about. It's not a constitutional case. It's about how broadly or narrowly we want to interpret that term, sex.
It's also a gay rights case, and Justice Kennedy was always he wrote all the gay rights major opinions. Now we have Kavanaugh in his place. I don't ask you to read tea leaves here, but that can't necessarily bode well.
Well, no, absolutely not. So we can't pretend that this is the same Supreme Court who made the decision that said there's a fundamental right to marry whoever you want, regardless of the sex of the person. That was Justice Kennedy's crowning achievement. He was the deciding vote when it came to gay rights cases. And so we certainly can't pretend that this is in any way the same court. Now, what's interesting about this case is that it actually has turned, it's made liberals make a conservative argument and conservatives make a liberal argument. So it's hard to predict where the justices will go. And this is why. There's no doubt that Congress did not intend to protect gays and lesbians and transgender people when they passed the Civil Rights Act. There's no one who thinks that they did intend to protect those groups. And so if you look behind the word sex at the legislative intent and the context, then you would say, no, this word does not protect gays and lesbians and transgender people. And so conservatives are actually advocating a much broader view of statutory interpretation, one that liberals typically espouse. And liberals are saying, well, kind of forget what Congress wanted at the time. Just look at that word and what it means today and what it means practically in order to protect people. So, which is a very long way of saying it's hard to predict that this would fall along the ideological lines that we expect.
Jessica Levinson with us, professor of law at Loyola Law School. We're also going to bring on David Levine, who's professor at UC Hastings College of Law. David, welcome to the program. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, and good morning, Professor Levinson.
Good morning to you. Let me begin, David, by kind of a broad question, because there are, as I said, some of the most divisive things on tap in the nation for the court to consider. And there was an article, perhaps you might have seen it, in the New York Times by Aaron Belkin, who happens to be a professor of political science here at San Francisco State, but also Sean McElwee. And what they said was you can't expect necessarily Chief Justice Roberts to, despite his decision on the Affordable Care Act, to be anything but partisan, because he's, despite being worried about how the public perceives the court and all that, basically he's not a balls and strikes guy. He's a conservative and he is partisan.
Well, I guess by the end of the term, we'll have a better idea on that. One of the cases I would point to that would go against my friend Aaron Belkin is June Medical Services versus G, which is the case that they just took on Friday, which will review the Louisiana abortion statute, which makes it very, very difficult for any abortion clinics to remain open in Louisiana if it's applicable. And the reason I point to that is that 3 years ago, Justice Kennedy provided the fifth vote to knock down a near identical statute out of Texas called Whole Women's Health, and that when this case came up to the Supreme Court, the Louisiana case came up, it's Chief Justice Roberts who provided the fifth vote to stop the implementation of the Louisiana statute. Now, he was in the dissent in Whole Women's Health. He thought that that statute was okay under the undue burden test. And yet, maybe following precedent, he went the other way, but they did accept the case. But Fifth Circuit found against the clinics. So that's a good example where we'll see which way Chief Justice Roberts goes, whether he's part of the conservative agenda to move to the right as fast as possible, or whether his institutional concerns will at least hold sway in some cases.
Can you give us a sense of what has gone on so far? The court convened on Monday, and this was after a three-month break. It's now got 9 months ahead of it, and I want to look at some of the other cases up ahead, especially about major issues. But we've got a trio of cases that have already been looked at and a number of cases that haven't been looked at. Can you give us a spectrum?
Well, yesterday they had a couple very important cases, one out of Kansas addressing the issue is whether a state has to offer an insanity defense. Almost all states offer it, and it's been part of our jurisprudence going back at least a couple hundred years.
In fact, forgive me, David, I think Kansas also doesn't offer it anymore. It's only Oregon that's left, right?
Well, it's a question of retroactivity with Kansas. You're right,
yeah.
Michael,
yeah.
Because this is somebody who, saying, wait, I should have had the opportunity to.
That's the nub of the case, I think. Yeah.
But there are a handful of states. And so the Supreme Court had an interesting argument there with respect to, well, what does insanity mean and whether that's required. So that's one. And then the other one that's a criminal case is the question of whether you have to have a unanimous verdict for conviction. Now, remember that in California, you have to have a unanimous verdict. But, for example, the ghost ship case, 10-2 in favor of conviction. Well, if that case had occurred in Oregon, there would have been a conviction, or in Louisiana, there would have been a conviction, or at least in the past, there would have been a conviction. And the court is addressing the question of whether or not the Sixth Amendment applies entirely to the states. There's a case from about 45 years ago that said on this issue it did not, on a split decision. And so we'll see where they go with that. So it's not clear exactly what's the, quote, liberal or conservative position there. Do you go back in time? What did the founders know? Or do you hold to precedent or what?
And you mentioned the abortion case. And let me go to you, Professor Levinson, on this. They're going to hear a case that is The court is going to hear a case on abortion rights on Friday, again out of Louisiana, 2014 law that requires doctors, when they perform an abortion, to actually have admitting privileges with a hospital within 30 miles of where they are performed. So Scopus has struck down a nearly identical case back in 2016 in Texas. What do you anticipate here?
Well, this, as you just discussed, I mean, this is one of the most highly watched cases because it is in many ways virtually identical to a case where Justice Kennedy sided with the liberals and said, no, there is not a compelling enough reason to have that requirement. It presents an undue burden on the rights of women to be able to obtain access to an abortion. And that Chief Justice John Roberts, as you said, voted with the liberals to say that Louisiana law that looks like the Texas law that we just struck down, that doesn't go into effect till we hear the case. People are trying to figure out, you know, does that mean that Chief Justice John Roberts, who would have voted to uphold the law, is now saying, well, I have to adhere to precedent. You know, well, I would have said on the matter of the first instance that the law is okay. We just made this decision, so I have to show that there's some sort of consistency, that we adhere to the concept of quote-unquote stare decisis. So all eyes will be on Chief Justice John Roberts. One other thing to look at is that in the Louisiana case, the Court of Appeals actually has some language where they say, we know this looks like the Texas case, but in this case, there's a little bit more evidence that these requirements that the doctor has admitting privileges, there's some small bit of evidence that this actually helps promote women's health. And so that's how we're going to distinguish it. I think if the court does vote to uphold this restriction, we might see the majority really trying to hang a lot of the analysis on that particular finding.
Well, the Supreme Court is taking on all kinds of cases, including LGBTQ rights, which we spoke of earlier, and abortion in its new term. Also, there is a case coming up in January that will be the first case the court will hear on gun rights in a decade, and that has to do with some plaintiffs in New York. Probably wouldn't have got on the court's docket if Justice Kennedy were still around, but we can go into that. What I really want to do now, though, is hear from you, our listeners, and bring you into this conversation and find out what's on your mind with the court and any questions you might have for our guests, Jessica Levinson, David Levine, two professors of law. You can be part of the program right now by giving us a call at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. That number again for your calls, 866-733-6786. I ought to mention we're only going up to the half hour here. We're going to talk about Syria after that. So if you have something you want to ask or bring into the mix here or make a comment, now would be the time to call. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. So let me ask you, David Levine, just quickly about this case coming up. I mean, it's not till January, but it's the first gun rights case, as I said, in a decade.
Sure, that's right. We had two important cases about 10 years ago. The first one recognizing the individual right, which had not been recognized all prior to that, and then the second one out of Chicago saying that the Second Amendment applied to the states. And since then, particularly Justice Thomas has been one saying, we need to hear more cases. Second Amendment is not getting its due. The New York State case is a law from New York that says that in the city of New York, you can't transport a gun, even if it's locked, outside of city limits. And so the complaint was that if somebody wanted to go to, say, a rod and gun club out on Long Island or over in New Jersey or something, they couldn't legally take their gun. The Second Circuit, a district court, and then the Second Circuit knocked that down. Well, when the Supreme Court took the case, actually, New York dumped the law. They could see this was not good for the position, and so that they actually got rid of the law and then suggested that the case was moot. Well, just the other day, the Supreme Court said, well, we're not going to dismiss the case for mootness, but at least we will take up that issue when we actually hear the case. But that suggests that there are justices on the court that want to weigh in on the Second Amendment, and this will be the vehicle to do that. And it is a case where it does seem awfully tight in terms of restricting gun owners' rights. If you can't transport a gun locked in a box for these purposes, you could see a lot of sympathy on the Supreme Court for the position that that's too much restriction.
Well, again, we are talking about the Supreme Court taking on some serious and profound issues. In fact, I ought to mention, I would be remiss if I didn't, that next month they'll hear a challenge to President Trump's 2017 decision to essentially reverse President Obama's 2012 executive order to protect Dreamers. But I know many of you have questions and comments, and so please feel free to join us again. The toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786. Let me go to a caller here, and let's begin with Vincent in San Francisco. Vincent, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, my question is, I guess, related to this case. Personally, it seems to me it's a bit of a no-brainer to, in the workplace, to not discriminate against the LGBTQ community. But I'm curious what the panel thinks when it comes to sports. As recently as January 2019, you can now change the gender of your child on their birth certificate by just having the two parents sign that for the courts. And now your son is now a girl and can play on girls' teams and potentially exclude, other girls from being on that team if it's a competitive one. Does this case affect that? And is that considered discrimination?
Neil, thank you for the question. Let me go to you, Professor Levinson.
Well, so the short version is that Title VII is really talking about employment discrimination, so not, for instance, where you'd see more Title IX issues dealing with schools and what's appropriate when it comes to sports teams. But so that's the narrow answer to the question. The broader answer to the question is that once the court makes a decision about what the Civil Rights Act protects, that could, in kind of indirect ways, pervade our understanding of what the federal government guards against. It is important still to remember, though, and this isn't exactly what the caller asked, but we can still have state protections for people based on gender identity or based on sexual orientation. So there was this kind of almost macabre joke after the gay marriage decision that you can get married on Sunday and in some states fired on Monday morning because you married someone of the same sex. So to your caller, I mean, you also have to look not just at what this federal statute is saying, but also what the state laws say in your area.
Again, Jessica Levinson's professor at Loyola Law School. Let me thank Vincent for his call and go right to another caller. And that's you, Neil. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking a call. I'll try to put this in two parts. First, on the Title VII case, can your guest explain why it's a more difficult case than it seems? And that's based on, the word sex doesn't seem clear. It seems ambiguous. So you go to the legislative history, and the legislative history is very clear. And I guess the second part is, more interestingly, is what, if any, policy there is to get around this. Because to get rights for LGBTQ, when I get the letters right, you have to get a statutory remedy. We don't have constitutional rights on this because of the whole play of the Commerce Clause and constitutional protections and state actors. So I'd invite your guests to talk a little bit more about that as an avenue of relief.
Yeah, thank you for that. And let me go to you, David Levine.
Sure. Well, I think it's quite right that no matter what happens with these three cases, state law protections will remain. This is an area where states can regulate as well as the federal government. So in a place like California, we do have substantial protection, and that would remain. So the fight might turn then to states, and the question would be whether states would care to extend their anti-discrimination law further or not. On the first part of the question about the word, it's intriguing that what's happened is that in over the years since 1964, there have been opinions. Justice Scalia wrote at least one saying that there's actually a broader meaning to the word sex, and it's when they adopted sexual harassment as part of what was protected under the word sex. And so it again, as Professor Levinson said earlier, there's kind of this flip that you have the conservative saying, let's look at congressional intent. Nobody dreamed that this would be the case in 1964. And it is the liberals in this case, if you will, who are saying, let's look at the word. And I think hoping to get Justice Gorsuch on board, that if he's going to be true to his stated jurisprudence, he ought to say, it's the word. We're not going to look at intent, and these protections can be incorporated or encompassed by the word sex. End of story. We'll see if he stays true to his principles.
And I'm going to follow that up with you, David Levine, with a comment from a listener, David, since you were talking about 1964. And David says, with regard to the LGBT cases and Civil Rights Act, Congress wouldn't have considered LGBT rights in 1964 because being LGBT was considered a mental illness then. How does that play into the legal arguments currently being considered?
Well, again, I think it goes to this question of, do you focus simply on the word sex and say, what meaning can that incorporate without looking at congressional intent? Or are you going to go behind the statutory language itself and consider issues like that in terms of intent? What might Congress have intended at that point? Or would you look, for example, at efforts that have been made in Congress over time to expand these rights, or in other statutes where these rights have been accepted? So,
David Levine is again professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, and here is BJ. BJ, you're on the air with us. Welcome.
I have a question about, or asking for a comment about, an article in The Economist from last year about the application of artificial intelligence to about 1,500 documents that were circulating at the time the Second Amendment was written. And they were searching for the term bear arms and what it meant in context at that time. The overwhelming majority of the documents used bear arms to mean military service. And furthermore, the article accused Justice Scalia and the majority that voted with him on that gun case of cherry picking. Have you heard of this argument, and have you contemplated its use?
That's either of our guests, I think. BJ, thank you for the question. Either David or Jessica here?
Sure, I'll weigh in. It was very controversial the way the Supreme Court changed its reading of the Second Amendment. Chief Justice Berger famously said that the idea that there was an individual right to bear arms was one of the biggest frauds he had ever heard of. And certainly, Justice Scalia was accused of cherry-picking, but we are where we are, which is that there was this shift to the individual right. That doesn't mean that there are no restrictions on guns. It's a question of what might be an undue burden.
Let me thank the caller, and we've got just a little time left here. I wanted to go back to you, Professor Levinson, and ask, it seems to be the consensus that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she asked the first question, I believe, when the court reconvened, is appearing pretty vigorous after all that radiation in August. She's 81 years old, but appears to be on top of things.
Well, certainly I can't speak as her physician, but I will say, if you look at her travel schedule over the summer, I mean, I think that she has been very aggressive at not only traveling and speaking and fairly long speaking engagements, but also at conveying that she is up to the job. She's always said, I'm going to do this until I feel like I'm slowing down. And of course, at this point, all liberals and progressives desperately want her to stay on the court as long as possible.
Well, we will certainly hope that that is the case, and we will hope that we will see some fair and judicious decisions by this court. Thank you so much, David Levine. Thank you, Jessica Levinson. And another half hour of Forum is right up ahead. Stay with us. We're going to talk about President Trump pledging withdrawal from Syria as Republicans are resisting and revolting. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.